Hi, Doctor.
Hi, Dad.
Happy 2024.
It's crazy.
It is indeed. It is indeed. You're already rocking and rolling, I'm sure.
Yep.
No rest for the weary. So today we're talking about a subject that's near and dear to my heart, resistance training. I found that religion, I want to say back in 2007 now or so. I mean, prior to that, it's not like I did no resistance training, and very little. But certainly since 2007, so this is talking 16 years for me, I have pretty religiously done weightlifting of some sort. Now, you have more recently come on board with strength training, right?
Yeah, maybe the last couple of years.
Yep. And prior to that, you always did cardio, right?
Yes.
You've always run or cycled or spun or what have you.
Yeah.
So what, other than my nudging, maybe kind of made you prioritize strength training?
So probably just more understanding around the benefits of it and coming to terms with the feeling after lifting versus the feeling after cardio, and that it doesn't feel the same. And that doesn't mean that it's like less of a workout, but I was just so used to that, like really higher intensity cardiovascular, you know, exercise, and the feeling that I got from it and that most people get from it, and it just not being quite the same as when you do like a, you know, session of like lifting weights. So that was probably the biggest thing, is knowing that I needed to, and that, you know, it's obviously net positive, and you should kind of do a little bit of everything when it comes to exercise, and getting over that change in how it feels.
Yeah. So let's talk about that piece. So you, would you say that you would experience, let's say, a runner's high when you did cardio?
Yes.
It's funny because I never have, you know, and there was a period of time when I was kind of into running and running at fairly long distances. Mm-hmm. And the best I got, Nicole, was it didn't suck.
You know? Right. Yeah.
But I never got that endorphin kick, that so-called runner's high. But afterwards, I would feel, you know, you always feel a sense of accomplishment, but I guess I would feel kind of a post runner's high,
a little bit euphoric. Yeah, that's probably more of what I felt. I mean, sometimes during too, especially more so with running, I would get the runner's high when you're just like cooking and it felt good. But it was more the feeling that I got after a higher intensity kind of workout like that. The feeling after just didn't, and still probably doesn't, feel quite the same as when I'm just lifting weights.
Right. You know, it's funny. For me, it's the other way around. I feel like when I'm done lifting, I just feel, you know, I feel good. I feel strong. You know, and it feels good to feel strong, kind of thing.
Yep.
And to some extent, that's what keeps me coming back. But we ought to talk about two things in today's discussion. One is the benefits of resistance training, and secondly, kind of what resistance training is, you know, and the fact that it doesn't just have to be heavy weights type of thing. So, so let's talk about the benefits first, because you mentioned that was, you know, ultimately the thing that kind of drove you toward adding resistance training to your workouts. So, what would you say stand out as the most significant for you?
Well, putting on muscle takes a lot of work, I learned. It's not easy. And you need it to maintain your level of activity throughout your lifetime. So kind of like knowing what I want to do when I'm 60 and 70 and 80 plus means I need to kind of put in the work now and maintain it. So having an understanding that it takes a lot of work, but it's more about the long-term, you know, I don't have to do it every single day. It doesn't have to be, you know, in 2 hours every day in order to get the benefit of it. But because I want to be functional and active and, you know, still running or doing whatever it is that I want to be doing forever, I kind of have to start now. And then just the benefits of muscle, muscle mass on, you know, metabolism and how it does decrease, you know, all cause mortality and cardiovascular disease. Because in my mind, I was tying cardiovascular disease prevention to just cardio, but knowing mm-hmm. that it helps with everything, helps with glucose control and those kind of all those things. But really the main thing is function.
Yeah. Yeah. So a couple of things I'd like to unpack there. One is that first part that you talked about of building up muscle now so that you'll have a nice kind of starting point as you get into your older years, when we know that, you know, kind of genetically we are predisposed to shed muscle the older we get. I think it's, right. you know, starting at age 30, 35 or so, you know, we start to lose muscle at the rate of maybe 3% per decade. And then it accelerates from there.
Yeah.
And there's an actual term for that, age-related sarcopenia. Mm-hmm. So to the extent, if you go into your 50s and 60s with like a minimal amount of muscle, you're already behind the curve.
Right.
So to speak.
Yep.
Yep. Good point there. And then the second point in terms of metabolic function and the fact that you decrease your risk for diabetes, what have you, what I've heard is, and you control glucose, what I've heard is that your muscles actually are the biggest source of storage for glucose.
Right.
Yep. So the more muscle you have in your body, the more ability you have to store it, as opposed to have it circulate in your blood.
Right. Yep.
Which ties all into that metabolic piece, which then, you know, recent research has indicated that poor metabolic function is a big contributor to cardiovascular disease. It's a big contributor to cancer even. So you can draw kind of a causal link between, you know, resistance training and cancer, you know, risk reduction.
Yep.
And then also what's interesting is even cognitive function is a piece of it. So again, going back to, you know, that concern around our, you know, how we're going to function in our 70s and 80s. The studies are finding that that resistance training is helping with cognitive ability, cognitive function, not so much around memory, but just around critical thinking, let's say.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's like there's no downside when it comes to any type of exercise. It's all going to be beneficial. But I think if you think about it as wanting to maximize, I'm all about efficiency. I just don't have all the time to do all of what I want to do in a day. So I didn't want to be really efficient with it. So that's another reason why it became clear that it was important, because if I want to get the most benefit out of the time I spend exercising, being more well-rounded with it and doing low intensity and high intensity cardio, in addition to the strength training, is where you're going to get the most benefit. I think it's hard because people tend to do what they continue to do So if you're like a runner and just run, you're going to continue to just run. It's really hard to kind of change the mindset around it. But when I think about it as wanting to get the most out of my time spent, because there's not a ton of that time, then it kind of seems like a no-brainer, because you miss out when you're not doing some of at least everything.
Yeah, that's a great way to kind of frame that and or reframe it so that, you know, it can kind of then set the foundation for behavior change.
Yeah,
because that's where it starts. So let's talk about, you know, if someone wants to get into strength training or resistance training program, certainly you can go to the gym. I mean, that if I think back to 2007, that's what I did. I had access to a gym and I had access to a trainer at the gym who could set up a training program and teach me the right, you know, the right form, because you the worst thing you can do is lift heavy things in with bad form and get hurt, and then, you know,
yeah,
you're not going to be strength training for a while. So great. If people have either the money or the time or what have you to go that route, certainly would recommend it.
Right.
But
that's what I say usually, like, if you can go and work with the trainer for a little while, so you're doing stuff correctly, so you're not getting injured, so you're, again, maximizing how efficient you are at the time you're spending doing this, because you have to make sure you're doing stuff the right way. And I follow classes, so I'll do it at home, but I'll follow classes just because I'm not someone who's going to, like, go down and just kind of freestyle my workouts. And I know everyone kind of goes in with some kind of plan, but for me, it's just easier to follow a class where the person's talking to you, telling you how to do things the right way.
You're following those classes on your Peloton app?
Yeah. Yep.
And you're doing that with, like, dumbbells?
Yeah. We've got several different sets of dumbbells. So I'll do, like, they have, like, split training programs, so you can kind of pick a program, so it kind of walks you through a week of different, and then you do that same like split program for, you know, 4 or 5 weeks at a time, and then do something different. But it just makes it takes the work out of it.
Yep. So I would say that you also, you know, if you don't have the Peloton app, and you, by the way, you don't need a Peloton machine, either a bike or treadmill or what have you, to get the app. You can just get the app by itself. But we're not sponsored by Peloton, so we don't want to.
No, I tell people just go to YouTube, find something exactly free at first. You know, figure out what you want to do. Figure out how you want to.
Also a free site I used to use a little bit when I kind of worked out at home, called Fitness Blender. Have you ever used that?
No.
Heard about that? Yeah, it's free site, and it almost works like Peloton in that you can choose the intensity of the workout, you can choose the duration of it, and you can choose, like, what equipment. You know, if you don't have any equipment, then fine. You can say that, and there's still workouts available. Yep. In that scenario.
Yeah.
And we should talk about, you know, if you have no equipment, there's still a ton of resistance training that you can do that is just body weight.
Right.
I mean, just, you can do body weight squats. You can do push-ups. You can all of those sorts of things, planks, and get a great workout. Or if you could, if you added some bands, that's another way. I mean, it's, you know, there's a lot of ways to skin this cat, and the research indicates that even minimal doses of resistance training that have no equipment involved can be beneficial.
Right.
So it's not that you got to go to the gym and throw around thousands of pounds of weight to get an advantage of it. It really is easy. Now, we should mention one nutritional component to this, because you know the goal is to, you know, add strength to some extent, build some muscle mass, what have you, and that will be helped if, in addition to the resistance training, you're getting adequate amounts of protein, right?
Yes, right. That's another thing that I'll talk about with patients all the time, is that no one's really eating enough protein, and it's hard to eat enough protein, and mm-hmm. that it's hard work to make the time and commit to exercise. So you don't want to waste your time doing it. So if you're doing it, you need to also be giving yourself enough protein to work with every day. Because the idea of thinking that you're completely wasting all of your efforts because you're not giving yourself enough protein. And I mean, there's some people who don't even realize it, but they're taking in, you know, 30 grams of protein a day and thinking that that's
adequate. Yeah,
totally adequate. And it's so far blown. So that's kind of alarming when you hear how much you should be.
Well, it's almost like, what's your guideline? Like maybe 3/4 of a gram per pound of body weight?
I usually just take the weight and change it to kilograms and do about 1.6 per kilo.
Kilo, which I think, works out to close to 3/4 of a gram per pound. I've heard upwards of a gram per pound.
Too. So like someone who has a lot of weight that they want to lose will kind of take their ideal body weight if you're significantly overweight, just because it might overestimate.
Right. That's a good point. It's your kind of ideal body weight. Not if you're 30, 40, 50 pounds overweight, then that would be too much protein, but that's not the issue with most people. Most people, it's too little protein.
Right. Like for a 100-pound person, it comes out to 72. So if you're 200 pounds, you know,
140 grams, 145 grams.
200 pounds with an ideal body weight of, you know, 150, then you can kind of knock it down a little bit.
Yeah, so. But still, let's say it's 120. If you're 150, it's 120 grams.
A lot.
You know, one egg is 6 grams of protein.
Exactly. So, you think you had eggs for breakfast, so you got tons of protein, but it's not that much.
Yep. I've also heard that you want to get a good amount of protein in early in the day and a good amount in later in the day with a fair amount in that middle meal as well. And you might have to, you know, have a protein shake in the middle as well to get it there. It's,
but it's generally you have to supplement with something usually. You're generally not getting all of that protein in with just whole foods throughout the day.
Right. Right. In this regard, it really behooves someone to look at the labels, to take a look at the protein, you know, that's in, let's say I eat Greek yogurt pretty much every day. I know exactly how much is there. I know that I've got to supplement that with, I've got this protein powder that is flavorless that I can flavor up any way I want to. Mm-hmm. And, because if I just did it with eggs, let's say in the morning, let's say my ideal body weight is 160-ish. So, you know, I'm shooting for 120 to 130 grams. Yeah. And if I want to get, let's say 50 of that in the morning and I'm eating eggs, I literally would have to eat eight eggs. So
it's not ideal. Daily consumption.
No. I could go heavy on the egg whites and, you know, remove some of the egg yolks, and that would probably be a little healthier, but still.
Yeah,
that's a lot of eggs. The other benefit, I tell you, but by making sure you're getting your protein in, is it does keep you satiated for longer. You know, it just takes more time to digest protein, and the added benefit is it takes more energy to digest protein and metabolize protein. So, for every calorie you take in protein, it'll relate to like 30% of that gets used up just in the digestive. In it, the energy to digest it.
Mm-hmm.
So each calorie of protein actually costs you, so to speak, or gains you 0.7 calories of actual, you know, kind of energy once it's in the system, versus let's say a carbohydrate, particularly a processed carbohydrate. It might be 5% of that is, you know, the energy to metabolize it. So another benefit. Well, good. Any other thoughts on resistance training before we close this out?
So I to kind of make sure people who, I mean, people who are already doing it already know, you know, they know the benefits, they know why they're doing it, and they are kind of in the habit of it. But for the majority of people, or for the people who aren't currently doing it, it can seem overwhelming. And you can like look stuff up and, you know, see all kinds of fancy equipment and just take it down to like the very basics, like find stuff again that's like body weight, start there, you'll feel it, no question, and then you'll gradually be able to kind of like work your way up to doing more. But making sure you're paying attention to the correct form is so important. And then I think about for women, because so many women don't do it for fear of getting too like bulky, you know, right, that kind of thing. And I remember my brother Anthony, when I would mention that to him, he'd be like, you would have to do so much lifting and be eating so much food and probably be also, you know, taking some kind of like exogenous
steroid.
Yeah. To actually get bulky. Like you would have to be dedicating so much of your time and energy. There's no way.
Right.
And I was like, okay, he's like, cause you see how hard like I work to like put on muscle and how much like it takes. So don't think that, oh, this is going to cause me to get like quote unquote bulky. Also just doing cardio, you know, it doesn't, it takes care of part of the benefit that you're trying to get at with exercise. But if you're doing it for, you know, appearance purposes and looks, you know, it's the strength training and the muscle building that's going to give you more of a toned, you know, look that you're looking for. And then for like people who are older, women especially, and I say that because women are usually the ones who aren't doing as much of the strength training, you know, decreases your risk of osteoporosis, decreases your risk of fractures and falls and that sort of thing. So it's so important to do some of it now so that when you get older to where you start to become at risk for osteoporosis and that sort of thing, you're already like way ahead of the game. You don't want to be the frail, small, you know, person as you get older that doesn't have a lot of reserve to fight things, whether it's mobility things or you come down with some kind of illness and, you know, you need some reserve on you to get through that kind of stuff.
Exactly. I think falls are like the, I don't know, third leading cause of death in people over the age of 70, something like that. I mean,
yeah,
it's surprising. Like your risk, if you fall and break a hip, your risk of dying in the next 6 months is like 50%. It's a crazy number. So
yeah,
good point. Okay. Well, let you get back to your busy day. Thank you. This has been great. Mm-hmm. And we will connect soon again.
All right. Sounds good. Okay.
Take care. Love you. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks again for listening. You can visit thedoctorandad.com. That's spelled thedrandad.com for show notes to any of our podcasts, as well as other useful info on extending health span. Now the legal disclaimer. This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice. And no doctor-patient relationship is formed. Use of this information and show notes is at the user's own risk. The content of this podcast is not meant to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Listeners should not disregard or delay taking medical advice or treatment for any medical condition they may have and should seek the assistance of their medical professional for any such conditions. We also want you to know that we take no funding from any product or service that may be mentioned on the Doctor and Dad podcast.